The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, however you're taking us in. We appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It is Kelly Bidlin. What's happening?
Not much, man. Welcome back.
Thank you, man. I just want to thank Ben Wilson and Jared Smith, who did a wonderful job.
Yep.
In my stead. The NBA and the NHL called, and they said, oh, we've resumed our playoffs, so you might want to come back. But with Ben, we discussed we took the opportunity so that he could say Châtrier as many times as possible on air.
Yep, he did, yes. He pronounced it very well, yes.
Both of them are awesome, so thank you to both of them. Kelly says we got 2 hours of Caitlin Clark talk this morning.
That's right, yep.
Okay. All the tentacles, political.
All the tentacles.
All the tentacles. That's what we're doing over the next 2 hours. It's great to be back here at the lovely D. We have much to discuss. We'll discuss the French Open that passed as Iga and Carlitos get home for us. We will update the June most wins Major League Baseball bet that we have on the Astros. It's early in the month, so we're not going to spend too much time on that. We will, Kelly, we will have a segment that could get awkward. Kelly Bidlin went rogue on a VSiN contest of a season-long baseball bet. Where he did not consult me and he made a bet, and well, we're going to change that today. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Can I do that? Okay, we'll do that later. I've been workshopping some intros to that segment. We'll see which one you prefer. We'll see which one is the least awkward of the bunch. We'll do that coming up as well. Plus, we have Mark Borchardt on baseball. Of course, Mike Somich, who always comes here on Monday, and then Jake Hahn to talk Stanley Cup final with us. That's coming up momentarily. Let us begin. By the way, Dan Hurley going to make his announcement during the show today either as well?
This is so dumb. Yeah, apparently, reportedly.
Yeah. there's zero betting implication to that, is there? Right?
Like, was not to me.
By the way, what would you put the odds at right now?
Man, I have no idea. I would think it's with the report. It's such weird reporting, too. I guess the way it's been reported, I would think it happens. Like, who makes a... Like, why would you schedule a time for an announcement to be released? Like, he did an interview with ESPN yesterday about his interview. Like, wait, you never see stuff like this. So
shouldn't every college coach, because every college coach, when they took their job, took it as, this is the job I coach, and then I recruit kids from high school. That's the gig. And now that job is completely different, right?
Oh, yeah.
That job is I recruit players from other teams, and I also have to recruit the players on my team every year.
Yeah.
So it's a completely different gig. Now, I wonder if that's different for Dan Hurley at UConn, because he is building a dynasty, and he's the king of that region of the country, or is still $100 million in Los Angeles, California enough to lure him. So I wonder. We'll see.
It is fascinating. I think it's a fascinating just situation and discussion from both sides, right? The NBA side and what it means for the Lakers. And then just it's another college basketball, college football example of, like, these guys don't want to be there anymore. Like, they are hamstrung by everything that goes into the recruiting NIL transfer portal stuff, that it's become a pain in the ass to coach in college.
I know I haven't been here for 5 minutes, but they show games behind Kelly's shoulder, and they're showing a game. I'm going to tell you what happens here. It's the Skins and the Raiders. It's an RFK. It's in the middle of the 83 season. The Raiders will go up 35-20, Kelly, and then put all your money on the Skins money line at that point.
Why do they keep showing random old Skins games here?
It's this one. 17-point outburst from the Skins to win this. By the way, they end up losing the Super Bowl to the Raiders later that year, but that's a different story. All right, NBA last night, game number two. Kelly, I'm sorry to bring this up, because you got Mavericks futures. But we must. So here's the dealio on this. Game one, of course, the Celtics blow out the Mavericks. Big time, take a 1-0 lead. Last night, heading into the game, Luka dealing with a thoracic contusion, a right knee sprain, and a left ankle soreness. And by the way, it's a good thing that he didn't have any bandages on before the game to indicate any of that.
And also, also his, like, random bleeding throughout the playoffs, too.
He looked like Elmer Fudd in a cartoon. Like, what are you doing?
Hey, man, whatever it takes.
So, in case you missed it last night, Mavs went up 13-6. That would be their high point. You're like, yes! Come on, Mavs. Tie this thing up. They're up 7. That was the end of that. Celtics eventually tied it at 22. Mavs led by 3 at the end of the first quarter. Luka had 13 by that point. He was 5 of 7 from the field, 1 of 2 from behind the arc. Celtics took their first lead at 36-35. Luka had 20 already at that point. 20 of the Mavs, 35. He was 8 of 12 at that point. Celtics led by as many as 5 in the first half. They only led by 3 at the half. At halftime, Boston was 13 of 13 from the line. Dallas was 5 of 11. We don't often talk free throws, but there's your difference between a three-point lead and a three-point deficit.
It's been a factor in both games so far.
Yeah, Luka had 23, 3 and 3 at the half. Keep in mind the three assists. He was coming off a game in game one where he only had one assist, and that was kind of the knock on him and, you know, didn't get his teammates involved. Here he was 23, 3 and 3. Hard to blame Luka for anything, though, because he's the only thing going on offense. Drew, by the way, Drew Holiday had 17 at the half, Porzingis 10. Tatum only had 5 on 2 of 9 shooting, but he had 8 assists. So that was his thing last night. Celtics beating them any way you want to at that point. 65-63 in the third quarter, Celtics. They go on a 10-0 run to go up 12, 75-63. That was the key stretch of the game. Boston led by 9 at the end of 3 on a Pritchard 3 at the buzzer. Mavs did cut it to 7 at 90-83. And then finally to 8 after the Celtics had gone back up 12. They cut it to 8 again at 97-89 with just under 5 minutes left. You're like, okay, this could still happen. But then two threes, one from Drew, one from Derek White. It was a 14-point game, and you're like, Katie bar the door. Mm-hmm. I even have it written down right here, Kelly. Katie bar the door. It's over. And then, strangely, it's not over because Dallas goes on a 9-0 run, even though while they're doing it, you're still looking at the clock. You're like, I don't know if they can get there. And they have an opportunity to go to get another bucket to cut it even further down from the 5-point deficit. But P.J. Washington on a drive to the rack with 50 seconds left, smothered by both Brown and White, a Brown bucket on the other end, put the Celtics up 7. That was it. 105-98, and that was the final score. Luka 32, 11 and 11 in defeat, but 8 turnovers. And Drew Holiday, the big star for the Celtics yesterday, 26 and 11. You're not getting anything from Lively here, Kelly, in your previous run-up in the Western Conference portion of this playoffs. He was so key for the Mavericks, including the game he missed, right, where it was magnified how much they needed him.
I'm so glad you brought this up. Nobody wants to talk about that for some reason.
They're not getting anything out of him.
No. He's been the third best player on the team throughout the playoffs.
Yeah.
And he's a non-factor. Game one, he was a disaster. It was clearly rookie, deer in the headlights, NBA Finals. He was stupid fouls all over the place in game one, played himself off the court. And, he's been a non-factor as much as Kyrie has. That's their second and third best player, have been absolutely useless so far.
Do you think Kyrie got in his head about this whole, like, his departure from Boston and then just sort of the back and forth with the fans? Because when they flash the camera to him sometimes, he's getting into it with the fans. And you're sort of like, okay, you should probably be above this. But it seems to have affected him in some way.
It's kind of weird because I thought he said all the right things coming into the series.
Yes,
and then,
did.
Yes. Like, especially last night, you're like, okay, this feels a lot like old Kyrie.
So here's my question to you, sir. Down 2-0. The Mavericks are north of $6 on an adjusted series price. They are 1.5-point favorites, by the way. Oh, by the way, game 3 back at the American Airlines Arena in Dallas on Wednesday night. This resumes on Wednesday. Remember, on a Wednesday, Friday, Sunday schedule this week, if necessary, mm-hmm. on Sunday. We have seen this in this postseason. By the way, I don't know if I'm being prisoner of the moment. If there's ever been a postseason in any sport that I have had less feel for, I don't know that there's one worse than this NBA playoffs.
I think that is an understandable statement.
So if we've been here before where a team's been down 2-0, as miserable as the Mavericks look, as much as the Celtics look to have every answer for the Mavs, could you make a case for betting the Mavericks on the series on the adjusted series price? Could you make a case for them in game 3? I'm assuming yes to the latter. And could you see this series still being long, or has everything we've seen been actually real and is likely to continue?
The latter.
This is a man with the Mavericks futures
the
ticket.
I tried to, after game 1, yeah. I tried to say, okay, that was complete Boston domination. Domination from beginning to end on all ends, but it's one game. Don't overreact. what did we see change last night?
Nothing.
Nothing. Like, this is, they have broken the Mavericks from what they have been for the past 6-7 weeks. This is not the same team we've watched. The pick and roll action that they live, everything comes from, is not there for Luka. He has to do everything in ISO. And then even then, you'd expect he'd get a little bit more help from a guy like Kyrie Irving, who's giving absolutely nothing. It's everything that's worked so far is completely broken right now. And I don't, sure, could it happen? Could they look like the team they did? Maybe, but this Boston team is
devil's advocate. 13 of 53 from three.
Yeah.
13 of 53. Remember, they averaged 12.3 makes, threes per game, that is, for the postseason coming into this series.
Mm.
That could obviously turn, what do we say, the only thing that matters in the NBA in a box score, really, just show me the three-point scoring, yeah, and I could tell you probably 90% of the time who won the game or not. Or is the fact that they're taking away the perimeter three such a big thing that that's actually likely to continue?
I mean, there's, yeah, like, there most of those, yes, there are some wide open misses. But, like, there's also some really forced, ugly threes.
Yes.
And also, it's from guys, like, the biggest thing is, I think you've seen through two games, it's the Celtics have figured out this Mavericks team, and then, oh my God, there's a massive talent discrepancy across the board. When you talk about get down from the stars, the talent, like, you can't, you're relying on some of these role players Dallas has, and they haven't been able to do anything. Meanwhile, there's six guys on Boston that could fill it up at any moment. I mean, Boston hasn't shot the three ball well yet
no,
either.
That's the thing.
And we know that game's coming. There's a Boston 45% game coming.
But you could see Dallas winning game three, though. Yes, maybe.
No. Nothing tells me to believe in that, Gil, except for past trends that we've seen.
If you could get an adjusted prop price on this 1983 game and do Joe Washington overs, I would bet them right now if I were you, this Raiders Skins game. Coming back, baseball with Mark Borchard next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get an in-depth betting preview of the U.S. Open with VSiN's golf betting experts on the Long Shots podcast. Wes Reynolds, Matt Brown, and Kelly Bidlin break down every aspect of this year's toughest major, including their best bets. The new episode comes out Tuesday, and check out the video version on VSiN Wednesday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Guess we got to talk Memorial. We got to talk Scottie Scheffler and
another one.
His ridiculous odds for the U.S. Open.
Guess who I had yesterday, Gil? Kyle Morikawa.
Oh, you did? Oh, man.
You can't even get excited, though, at this point, right? Like, I'm on the air with Ben Wilson, and Ben's like, you getting excited? I'm like, no, man, I'm just trying to hedge off this at some point.
The amazing thing is, didn't Morikawa have, like, a triple bogey on Saturday, was it? Where he's like, okay, I'm too far ahead. Let me up the degree of difficulty.
Scheffler,
here.
You mean?
Scheffler, what
yeah,
did I say?
Scheffler had a triple bogey. Scheffler had a triple on Saturday. And he had a stumble yesterday at one point, too.
Yeah, he sure did. Still got there. We get tweets at Benny the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Ray Pierce. I wanted to give you a Caitlin observation from somebody far from the sun. I've never watched a minute of women's Olympic basketball. That record will stay intact. With Clark on the team, I'm invested. I think I speak for many. Dumb business decision. Ray, I think most people agree with you that it, from a business standpoint, that you're correct, that not having her on the team is going to dampen the interest tremendously. But from a strict basketball perspective, I'm not sure. Of all the things in this controversy, that's the one thing that I don't think is a controversy. Like, from a sure basketball perspective, I get why she didn't make the team.
Yeah, I also think that long term for her, it's probably a good thing. She'll have plenty of Olympics to play in.
J-Rod, Iga is the only member on the VSiN Mount Rushmore period. Gil deserves an incredible call, Queen of Clay. I think he's talking about the body of work for Iga. If Gil doesn't dedicate a full segment to what I've determined is the Mount Rushmore of VSiN history, I will say bad things. Iga is the Queen of Clay. Bring it, the best call in VSiN history. As a body of work to see where she's gotten. We will get to the French Open here momentarily. Jason H11, hey, Kelly, who's this Gil guy filling in for Ben Wilson? Just kidding. Welcome back, Kelly. Get sushi. Cap, Gil, this morning on Follow the Money, Paulie said Hurley was minus 400 at a non-disclosed book to take the Lakers job. Well, we'll see. See what he does. Brian M., to answer your question on the 90s Skins game on the TVs at the D, Gil has a universal remote in his bag. Los Vegas 514, yo, welcome back. I took that Skins bet live. Oh, wait, only if, and Russell Smith, is that Raiders Skins game you referenced? In that game, Joe Washington had a screen pass go for like 90 yards, and when they ran it to the other side in the Super Bowl, Squirek made the pick six, coaching at its finest. Yeah, that was this game at RFK was one of the great RFK games. Joe Washington was unbelievable again. They came back from a deficit. But, yes, the Rocket screen and the Raiders were all over it towards the end of the first half in the Super Bowl later that year. Super Bowl 18, which the L.A. Raiders won against the Washington Redskins, who had won 36 of 42 football games prior to this game.
The grass looks great.
36-6 over the span of a few years they were at this point. Let's talk some baseball. Mark Borch joins us from an undisclosed location somewhere in the desert. What's happening, Mark? Yeah, we don't have Mark. Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. We'll try Mark momentarily. Let me just ask you this. Oh, there we go.
Sorry. I'm pumped. I'm pumped up for the season. I'm so excited I put myself on mute. But no. It's been a really fun season for me. It really has
been. Has it been a profitable season for you?
I don't think so. I think that it depends on how the future bets come out. But so far, I'm down a little bit. It's not like it's negligible either way.
Anything in particular that you can identify for that?
Well, yeah, these teams like the Braves pretty much have killed me this year. They're the best hitting baseball in the history of Major League Baseball last year, and they really haven't performed very good compared to that this year. So, you know, I mean, what do you do? And I say this quote unquote as bad as they are this year, because they're still hitting the ball pretty good. They're top 15 in baseball, but they're not the best team in baseball, you know, historically. So, you know, that throws a wrench into you as a handicapper, Gil.
Well, here, this is a portent of things to come on the show, because Kelly and I are going to talk about this little VEASAN contest that we're doing. Every show has a season-long mythical bet that we're doing, a hypothetical bet that we're doing. We'll see who ends up having the best one. But the Braves are an interesting case because, especially juxtaposed against last year, because remember, Spencer Strider to win Cy Young, those of us who are into advanced analytics, we came, you know, we focused on their fan, on his FanGraphs page. It was like, these have to manifest. These things have to manifest. And also, conversely, Blake Snell's advanced stats have to manifest in the other direction, and therefore Spencer Strider will end up winning the Cy Young. That didn't happen, right? Blake Snell kept this amazing Houdini act going the entire year, where he put runners on base with a high walk rate, and then he had this unbelievable strand rate, and then Spencer Strider just still had some games where he imploded. So on the heels of that, where the advanced stats didn't manifest for the Braves, we have this version of the Atlanta Braves, who, as you point out, from an offensive standpoint, like, I look at some of their advanced stats, right? Right, Mark? I'm like, okay, their hard hit percentage is still 35%. That's like, that's number two in baseball, I believe. Their exit velocity, 90.3 miles per hour. But then you look at all their other numbers. They only have 65 homers for a team that last year had 307 of them, tying MLB's single-season record. Their current batting average is .244. Their slugging percentage is .401. That's 100 points lower than what they had last year. So, again, it's one of these weird things with advanced stats, and it's strange that it happens to this ball club, where you think, okay, if you keep hitting the ball hard, your exit velo is what it is, eventually you're not going to hit it at players, right? But they keep doing it.
Yeah, no, you bring up some really good stats, because it's like, how does this team go from, I mean, literally, Gil, I mean, I'm not talking, you know, I like the Braves. I like Atlanta. I like listening to the Braves. I like the broadcast. I like all that stuff. But I'm not saying I don't like Atlanta this year because of all that. I like it because they were the best hitting team in the history of Major League Baseball. So you say, okay, those are really good numbers. You went really granular on that. And I think that that's a pretty good, I think that's something good to bring up, because what's the sample, right? We got 65 games. Yeah. I think you still have to use a lot of last year's data. For me, what's the magic number? Well, 500 plate appearances is a good start right there. Okay. So you look at the 500 plate appearances, and they're still, even without Acuna, they're still top three in baseball. So I think that they'll regress to the good. I don't think that they have really any, if you're a Braves fan, any concern they won't make the playoffs. You know, I have them making the playoffs 97% of the time, but, you know, I don't think they're going to.
Oh, yeah, wow,
I mean, really, I mean, and I don't based on what I've seen. And of course, the bullpen comes in there. Their bullpen's really good. Now, I've been really bullish on them to win the division, but I don't think that's going to happen. 22.4% to win the division now. And that Acuna loss was a big deal. They lost about a third of a run just off the top of my head from a run projection standpoint when they lost him. So that's a big subtraction.
Yes, for sure. They're 5-8 since his injury, his season-ending injury. The one thing, though, that I will add, and we'll close this on the Braves, the one thing that I will add about them, they don't walk anymore either, right? And Acuna had a lot to do with that. Like, they have a really low walk rate on offense, so they're not putting guys on in the same way, right? They're not getting those free passes, and that obviously has a cumulative effect as well. Your picks today.
Well, yeah, and you can get I just wanted to jump in there because you can break down the numbers and be like, well, it's this amount per plate appearance. He's going to get this many plate appearances, and this is what it is. But how much of that affects like the pitch selection for the next guy and like how you're going to attack the team as a whole? And I think that's really hard to handicap. And if you can do that, if you can handicap like pitch preparation, well, then you're a better man than me.
Stay tuned later in the show where I completely get rid of our bet from last week when I wasn't here and make a Braves bet that has something to do with what we just talked about. All right, what did you play today, Mark?
You know, there's two parlays I'm going to play. The first one is a same game parlay, but it's just a two-teamer. I like Tampa Bay at +138 and then under in the same game. I like both pitchers. Pepio's been really good, 27.4% strikeout rate. He's got really good stuff plus. Low hard hit per nine. I like Corbin too. Corbin's pretty good, but if you look at a strikeout rate, it's less than Pepio, 23%. Still really good stuff, plus 95th percentile hard hit per nine in the top 10 percentile in baseball. I think we got two good pitching starters, and then the bullpen's really good there too. Baltimore bullpen's number two by my ratings. Tampa Bay's number 10. And if you play these teams in a parlay, go with the dog Tampa Bay under 7.5. It pays +359, Gil. So pretty good return on that bet. Then we will look to two teams. One team that I'm super bullish on, still am, the Minnesota Twins, and I'm going to play them with the Padres. And then that one pays, it's not great, it's like +115, but we have significant pitching advantages, hitting advantages, bullpen advantage. Oakland has a better bullpen than San Diego. Other than that, the components all favor the teams I'm betting, Gil.
Twins and Padres have two frustrating clubs, right? Like, just when you think they're about to soar, then you turn around and they're doing the opposite. All right.
Yeah, they're heartbreakers, Gil.
Yeah. Okay. Mark, we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gil. Have a good day.
Mark Borchardt, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, right here on A Numbers Game. We'll come back. We'll talk French Open and lessons learned as we move forward and look backward to the clay season and clay seasons ahead. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This segment of A Numbers Game is brought to you by Zyn Nicotine Pouches, America's number one nicotine pouch that requires no timeouts or half times. Zyn is a smoke-free, spit-free, hassle-free nicotine pouch that can be enjoyed anywhere, anytime. What makes Zyn number one? It's available in a deep roster of varieties, including wintergreen, spearmint, and citrus. And you can choose between two strengths, 3 milligrams or 6 milligrams. Zyn is made with only 6 simple ingredients and is easy to use. Plus, it delivers up to 1 hour of nicotine satisfaction per pouch. Zyn is discreet, so you can enjoy them indoors or out. Never miss an at-bat or game-saving catch with Zyn. Find your Zyn at your local convenience store or online at Zyn.com. That's Zyn, Z-Y-N.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Skill Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada at the D. Bar Canada, the barrage here at the D. Lovely downtown Las Vegas, numbers game. We get tweets at Beating the Book. We're going to read a few here. Numbers guys. What's that term for when you win the game in tennis after you broke your opponent's serve? I heard that a bunch on Sunday. Shows you how good my memory is. Is it early onset dementia for me? Consolidate the serve. Once you break the serve, Kelly, what you want to do is you want to consolidate the serve. It's a two-pronged approach. When I play Wishnev, did I ever?
Wait, I got to ask it again. So you get the break, and then you win the following game where you're on serve?
To consolidate.
To consolidate.
Because if you break and then you get broken back, what'd you really do?
Yeah.
Two-pronged approach.
You didn't get anything.
Ever tell you the two-pronged approach when you play Wishnev? Wishnev says this about himself. He goes, Gil, here's how you beat me. You find the fat man, and then you hit the ball where the fat man can't get to
it. I was going to say, it's probably a similar strategy to beating me.
That's what he says to him.
I ain't running after that.
Rich PSM, he doesn't like Kyrie very much. Let's just put it that way. I can't really read the tweet. But he doesn't really like Kyrie that much. And he thinks there's karmic retribution happening to Kyrie in this. And then Will Hill, our own Will Hill, adds there's also a ton of length to throw at him with guys like Holiday. So that has an effect on Kyrie as well. I was, looking at NBA MVP. I'm going to ask this. Jake Hahn is going to come on. We're going to talk about the Stanley Cup final here momentarily between the Panthers and the Oilers. And one of the questions that I'm going to ask him is, all right, is now the time that we just bet on the Oilers on the adjusted series price? Do we bet MVP, or excuse me, Conn Smythe now on the adjusted price? Like, is this what we've been looking for?
Well, I think he's all in on the Panthers.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the point being, you're looking for betting opportunities. So in the NBA, we talked about, okay, do you take the, does anybody still believe in the Mavericks, take them at north of 6-1? And then you look at the MVP market, maybe there's a way to bet it by proxy there, but Luka is exactly 6-1. Like, he's exactly the same price as the Mavericks coming back and winning it. So there's no bet there either, right?
I'd still bet it.
You'd still bet Luka.
Still bet it. Should I be that guy?
Wait, but you just told me you're not going to bet the Mavericks on an adjusted series
price. I'm just
saying,
if you were going to bet it, I'd still bet Luka in MVP instead of the series price.
Right, but if it's the same exact thing, why would you bet the MVP?
It's the same exact thing, I'm sorry. Yeah. There was a slight difference at the odds I was looking at.
Oh,
this
not
morning,
the ones I was looking
at. Okay.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
is there? I'll bring it up. Is there a reality, Gil, if this gets to 7 games, where Luka Doncic could win that award in a losing effort? I know it has not happened since the first time, right? The very first NBA Finals that we had.
The answer is no.
Okay.
I don't think we're like that anymore.
I don't think we are.
As like
either.
A voting body in any of these leagues?
I don't think we are either, especially because of what you just said. It's like it's like the awards rules we always talk about.
What
happened? Right?
If we've learned one thing on this show or on this network through the years, is that we, as a sports betting network, are way more nuanced, perhaps to our detriment, right?
Mm.
Way more nuanced on these things than the actual voters are. The voters are like, losing player. They don't even think about it, right?
And I only bring it up in that exact situation, right? Like, it would have to be 7 games. There's no way he'd even get considered if it was anything less than that.
Would you bet Drew Holiday at 7-1 right now?
If I had to make a bet, I would bet yes, that is the bet I would make.
And again, we shouldn't as bettors get wrapped up. Oh, but you could have had him at 100-1 before the series, and you could have had him at 20-1 before game one.
He also didn't have the stats.
He also didn't have the stats. Yeah, I think that's the better bet, obviously, at this point.
I actually think it's pretty fascinating right now with, you can get a long number on him. I know Jaylen Brown's gotten a lot shorter, but all right, at DraftKings plus 175 and plus 750, I mean, you could take a piece of each. I think I'd be feeling pretty confident, actually, with those two right now.
Can we talk a little tennis?
Yeah, absolutely.
A little autopsy here on the French Open. Iga Swiatek gets home. So does Carlos Alcaraz. Both were the short shots. Carlos was the short shot to win it on the men's side. Iga was the favorite. By the way, just to give you an idea of what she's favored next year in the French Open, what her number is now, minus 175
Are you serious?
A year out.
Holy hell.
And again, if you're just landing on the show, you're like, well, big deal. You called those. They were the favorites. We've kind of had a history with Iga, from her being 33-1 in 2020 to, by the way, people don't remember this. 2 years ago, we were still hitting her at 7-1, tournament after tournament in Miami and at Indian Wells. So this young lady has made us more money than almost everything else combined.
-175? Wow.
Yeah. So when Drew and I did the Beating the Book podcast on the French Open, that was one of the things that was the big thing we were pointing out, which is because Drew has the historical numbers on this. Iga Swiatek on clay is now rapidly approaching Rafa Nadal on clay, which, again, I said it 4 years ago on this show when she won at the French Open. I said she will win double-digit majors. People laughed. She's halfway there now. She's won 5. And I said that because she's going to win so many French Opens, it's not going to be funny. I also then said she's going to be the greatest of all time, and I tweeted out again this weekend. I said she is on pace to do that. Now, some people apparently don't like the word, don't or ignore the phrase on pace, but she's absolutely that. Five majors. She just turned 23. Ninth all time, ranked number one. 22 singles titles already. And look, this is one of the great calls ever, and so she keeps getting it done. Now, she did it easy peasy. I mentioned after the Osaka match last week, that should have been the final. I think that bared out. She spent 10 hours on court. Three were against Osaka. 7 hours in the other six matches. And then in the case of Carlos Alcaraz, he becomes the youngest player to win on all three surfaces, so slams on all three surfaces. And he does so in the final against Sasha Zverev. There's a couple other stats with him that are noteworthy as well. 21-year-old, the fourth youngest three-time men's major champ in the Open era. Seventh man to win a major title on all three surfaces. We were betting him on clay court tournaments at the end of the world, you know, 3-4 years ago when he wasn't a thing. And now here he is doing this. And I feel terrible for Sasha Zverev in the sense that Zverev still hasn't won a major. This was only his second finals in a singles major. The previous one was in 2020 in front of no fans at the U.S. Open. It was the tournament where Djokovic hit the line judge, and so he got disqualified, and so it ended up being Dominic Thiem and Sasha Zverev in the final. And they both knew because Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic had won all the majors through their whole careers. They were like, this is our one chance to win it. Zverev went up 2-0 on him. Then in the fifth set, Thiem forced the fifth set. Zverev had it 5-4 on his racket and gacked it. And so now, yesterday, we had Alcaraz. So we hit the +450 parlay of Iga and Alcaraz. And by the way, our other guys, Djokovic, the other parlays we had with Iga, Djokovic got knocked out of this tournament with a knee injury. Yep. And Casper Ruud ended up having a stomach bug against Sasha Zverev. So, like, you know, I don't know what could have been also, right?
Yeah.
But yesterday, and you have to be honest about this as bettors, yesterday it was 2-1. Like, Zverev had a terrible game on serve, 2-1 in the fifth set. Alcaraz breaks him. And in that fourth game, it's love 40. So Alcaraz is about to give it back because Zverev is about to break him. He's got three chances for it. And there's Alcaraz gets a couple points, and there's a double fault in there, and the umpire comes in and overrules it. And when they show Hawkeye, it wasn't clear on the broadcast if it nicked the line or not, but I think it was a poor overrule, and it changed the whole rest of the match. And so Alcaraz got it on an umpire overrule. I know what you're going to say. Clay, can we just do Hawkeye on clay anyway?
What's the point of having the technology? Like, what the hell?
Because they're French. Egalité.
How many times?
Avantage.
Avantage.
Chatrier.
It's so hard for us to sit here. We bring this up every football season and stuff. But we know the technology exists. Why don't they use it? And then the sport that actually uses it goes to the French Open. They're like, nah, let's throw it out.
Here's the lesson learned, though. Had a great hard court season, up 26 units. Gave some back in the clay season. Was not a good thing overall, even though it finished with a flourish with a lot of these matches. Here's what I knew but didn't abide by. I still bet a lot of dogs on clay. That's what my numbers say. But here's historically what this graph is showing, and I'll just explain it, which is clay, and specifically the French Open, is where dogs just don't manifest. And if you bet dogs between the years 2010 and 2023, you would have hemorrhaged money at the French Open, specifically on Roland Garros. I did not pay attention to that enough and just went with my numbers to a fault. And so you just, I personally, just speaking for myself, I have to remember that and be more humble to that moving forward into next year and beyond. We'll come back. Stanley Cup playoff with Jake Hahn next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're this close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSiN. That's code VSIN for new customers. Get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5 only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, and this gentleman comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He is our hockey aficionado, who, by the way, deserves mention. I don't think we mentioned this enough, that before the playoffs started, he said it's going to be the Rangers and the Oilers in the Stanley Cup Final. So close. Of course, it's the Panthers and the Oilers. With the Panthers up now 1-0 after a 3-0 win in game number one. There goes the fly, Kelly. It's Jake Hahn, everybody. How you doing, Jake?
I'm doing great, guys. And thanks for giving me at least half credit there, right, for getting the Oilers into the Cup final. Yeah, close on the Rangers, but close doesn't count, obviously, and Florida gets in there. And I really did feel like the team that made it out of the Eastern Conference was either going to be the Florida Panthers or whoever won the Rangers and Canes series. Now, the Rangers win that series, obviously, and then they fall to the Florida Panthers. But this Panthers team is really strong, guys. And even though they won game one and they're up 1-0 going into tonight's game, we didn't see the best version of the Panthers in game one, and they were still able to win and lean on Sergei Bobrovsky. And that's the scary part about this team. There's so many different ways that they can beat you, and the Oilers found that out in game one on Saturday night.
Jake, of course, co-host of The Point, the fantasy hockey show on Sirius XM NHL. You can follow him on Twitter at jhahn4. That's the number 4, H-A-H-N. Let me just ask what I asked a version of in the NBA moments ago, which is, okay, Oilers are down 1-0. Now, let's just say, I know you have, it sounds like you're about the Panthers here. But if you had conviction on the Oilers, is this the time to, because on the adjusted series price, they're plus 210. You can get Connor McDavid for north of $3. Wouldn't the bet be to bet Connor McDavid for the Conn Smythe?
I think so. I think if you're willing to back the Oilers to win the series, then you get a better price, obviously, on McDavid to win the Conn Smythe. And I struggle to see it going to anybody else. I think there is a world where Leon Draisaitl could win it. I don't see a world where anybody outside of those two guys wins it. And I think at the end of the day, it would ultimately go to Connor McDavid if they win this series. And he looks 100% healthy, or at least close to 100% healthy. We were speculating late in that Canucks series on an injury for McDavid, and he did not look 100% at all. And even early in the Dallas series, I didn't think he looked 100% either. And as that series went on, he looked better and better, got a full week off this week leading into the Stanley Cup final. And I thought he looked terrific in game one. He was dancing. He looked like the regular Connor McDavid. So, yes, if you're willing to back the Oilers, I think I would just take the better price and go Connor McDavid for Conn Smythe, because if they do win this series, it will more than likely be on the back of Connor McDavid, and the voters would go to him for the award.
Yeah, it's a little different than the Doncic-Maverick price difference. So let me just ask this. Beyond getting the puck by Bobrovsky, which is obviously the simple answer to this question, what must the Oilers change here moving forward?
Yeah, well, I actually thought they did a great job managing the forecheck of the Florida Panthers, and the Panthers forecheck has been so strong the last couple of years, guys. It's really impressive, and they can wear teams down over the course of a series. We saw them do it to the Rangers. The Rangers defensemen just seemed so banged up by the end of that series. They didn't have much gas left in the tank. And I could see something similar for the Oilers as this series goes on. So I actually think they did a lot of things well in that last game. 5-on-5, they really impressed me as somebody that came into this series backing the Panthers and thinking that even it possibly could be a quick series. I saw a lot of things from Edmonton's game that made me think, okay, maybe they will have their mark on this and, you know, find a way to get into this series. So I think they just have to stick with what they did in game one and hope for some better puck luck and to play with a lead. I really do think whichever team scores first in this series is going to have a lot of success, because the Panthers are great at playing with a lead. We saw them able to close out that game on Saturday, and we've seen Edmonton able to close out a lot of games throughout the course of these playoffs when they play with the lead as well. So that first goal tonight is going to be huge. Like I said, Edmonton showed me a lot of positive things in their game despite the loss and not being able to beat Bob, like you mentioned, Gil. I still think Edmonton could come away from that game feeling pretty good about how they played and just thinking, let's run it back and hope for some better fortune in game two.
Panthers minus 135 tonight. The Oilers plus 114 on the comeback. And by the way, real quick, you see anybody else on the Panthers? If the Panthers win this, is there a path for anyone but Bobrovsky to win Conn Smythe?
I think there is. I do. And obviously Bobrovsky had a terrific game one. And if he plays like that for the rest of this series, and because leading up to this point, guys, it really hasn't been a Bobrovsky run for the Panthers like it was last year. Last year, they were totally reliant on him. This year, they're just a dominant hockey team, and he's there, and he'll make them a couple saves throughout the game if they need it. But they really haven't been leaning on him the way that they did last year. Now, game one was a different story. Game one looked a lot like the Panthers from last season in the playoffs, where it was leaning on Bobrovsky, and he had to really carry the team in that game. So if that's what we're going to see the rest of this cup final, then yes, Bobrovsky would win the Conn Smythe if the Panthers win this. But I still like Sasha Barkov, guys. He had a terrific assist in Saturday's game, and his two-way game. If he's able to shut down McDavid or slow down McDavid, I think it's impossible to shut down a player like that. But he's going to be tasked with trying to slow down McDavid throughout the course of this series. If it finishes, and let's say the Panthers win in five or six games, and McDavid is relatively held off the score sheet based on what we expect from him, a lot of credit is going to go to Barkov for that. And I think the media loves a good two-way center. You know, kind of similar to when Ryan O'Reilly won it years ago for the St. Louis Blues. So I still really like Sasha Barkov to take home that award.
I probably should have asked this first, but I'll ask it now. Because I don't know if you know this about us here in the United States, Jake. We're very, geocentric. And we, you know, there's this whole thing about, you know, Canada hasn't won a cup in three decades. Is it a national cause, or do we overrate that? Like, do people in Toronto care if Edmonton wins the Stanley Cup? Is there any brotherhood on that, or is that just nonsense that we make up here?
No, it's, I'd say it's closer to nonsense than anything. I can't speak for everybody there. You know, there's, everyone's a little bit different, and there might be some people that say, you know, I want to get behind the Canadian team, or I want to get behind Connor McDavid specifically as the best Canadian player going right now. Now, we haven't really seen a lot of international hockey over the last 10 years or so. So you don't have maybe those connection with the country players as maybe we did, you know, 10, 15 years ago when we were playing a lot of international hockey. But I do think Canadians could get behind McDavid specifically. But I can tell you specifically, as someone that lives in Toronto, Gil, no one here cares about the Edmonton Oilers at all. As soon as the Leafs are out, it's summertime, it's patio season. You know, if the Blue Jays are good, that would help. They're obviously not. So I think, you know, people here have just moved on. They're more talking Leafs off season and what the Leafs are going to do and get ready for next season. So I think at least specifically for people in Toronto, I don't think most of them care about what Edmonton does in this series.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
That was my thing. I spent some time in Toronto. Like, I never got the sense that there's just unity on this stuff.
I would say great question, because I would have guessed the other way. So the SEC is more ridiculous than the country of Canada rooting for each other.
That's correct.
Those SEC chants drive me insane. Good for you, Canada. Stick to your teams.
That's right. Totally. All right. So real quick then, last hockey question, because I want to get your thoughts on golf before you leave here. If you had to predict, you know, Panthers in how many games? I assume you're going Panthers here. How many do you think does the trick here?
Well, my initial pick before the series was Panthers in five games. I thought Florida would win both their home games, so one for one so far. We'll see what happens tonight. And I think that they can take one in Edmonton. And if that's the case, we're 3-1 coming back to Florida with the chance to close it out. I like their chances to close that out and just say, no, we're going to put our foot down and end this series now. So I'll stick with Panthers in five. My initial bets before were Panthers to win the series and Panthers -1.5 games. So little leeway there where it could go six. Just as long as it doesn't go seven and the Panthers win. So I'm going to continue to back this team, even though, like I said, I was very impressed by the way that Edmonton played in game one. If this is the Bobrovsky we're going to get in the cup final, I think Florida's got a distinct edge between the pipes. I don't trust Stuart Skinner in this spot, in this spotlight, whereas Bobrovsky's played in games like this before.
Yeah, by the way, just to give you some numbers on what Jake's been talking about, Panthers in five, currently at +250. Barkov to win the Conn Smythe +280 over at DraftKings, and Bobrovsky, obviously, the short shot at +220 with the Panthers up 1-0. We only have 60 seconds. U.S. Open thoughts and bets, sir.
Yeah, well, guys, I'm not usually a chalk guy when it comes to this sort of stuff, but it is hard to not bet Scottie Scheffler right now. This guy is just incredible, and it does feel like it's only a matter of time before he gets one of these, right? Whether that's a U.S. Open or a PGA Championship, these courses are and setups are made for a Scottie Scheffler type, right? So eventually he's going to break through and get one of these. It's scary to build a full outright card and go against this guy right now. So I do think he gets it done this week. If I'm going somewhere else, I'm looking at a Bryson DeChambeau. I really like where his game has been at this year. And as we know, he's won a U.S. Open in the past as well. These courses generally set up for him. And I got to give a shout out to Colin Morikawa, who pushed Scotty yesterday. And at these big elevated events or majors this year, he's really stepped up. And I trust his driving accuracy to maybe stay out of that long rough and have some birdie looks throughout the course of the week. So those are the three guys I'm going to be looking at this week.
If I was doing a sports talk radio show today, the topic would be, what's more dominant, Scottie Scheffler in any golf tournament or Iga on clay? But of course, because the mainstream media doesn't even know who Iga is.
I was going to say.
Can't really have that discussion. Thank you, Jake. Appreciate it, man. Good luck.
Great stuff, guys. Have an awesome week.
Jake, talk to you. Everybody. Kelly and I will be back. We got a lot to discuss, including tennis, golf, and more next.